for listening. If you like the candid discussion and are seeking the truth behind the mainstream narrative, then please subscribe and share. Not only am I grateful, but those who seek the truth and wish to empower themselves and their families' health, freedoms, and future will also be grateful.
I'm in the game.
Hey, everybody. We are in the game. I have Morley Robbins here. I've been excited to talk with him for a while now. So we finally were able to hook up our schedules. And today, Morley wants to talk specifically about the SWAT team that resides within the power of your hormones. So thanks for being here with us today, Morley.
Absolutely. It's been a long stretch, but happy to be back and look forward to our discussion.
So why don't you kick it off? Where do you want to go with this? Tell us about hormones. First of all, what are they made of? Primarily.
Cholesterol.
Good.
Yeah.
Cholesterol and what? What else? Protein?
That's actually a really good question. I've assumed a lot of amino acids, but not many. I mean, these things are incredibly powerful with very few parts to their being. So I think it's really helpful for people to know that where do these chemicals come from? And so I've been fascinated during this year and a little bit of last year to learn about the origin of oxygen on this planet. And it goes back a long time, you know, billions of years ago, because there wasn't always oxygen on the planet. And what's he talking about? But the reason why we're having this conversation, the reason why we're working on these computers, is because of higher intellect. And you got to be able to burn fuel with oxygen in order to increase the amount of energy you get out of the food. So when you're fermenting yeast, you get 2 ATP. If you ferment glucose, you get 38 ATP. But I shouldn't say ferment. When you ferment yeast when you oxidize glucose, you get 38. But when you oxidize fat, you get 140. And so think of it as miles per gallon. If you're not able to use oxygen, you're going to get 2 miles per gallon. If you use oxygen and you're using sugar as your fuel, wow, I'm going to get 38 miles per gallon. Most people would be thrilled with that. But if you get 140 miles per gallon, wow, that's amazing. And so that's the problem. When they put us on a low-fat diet, they lowered our miles per gallon from 140 to 38, and we never realized what the bait and switch was. Mm. So big changes. And so when oxygen did start to appear on the planet a long time ago, because of photosynthesis and sunlight hitting what are called cyanobacteria, and they started to emit oxygen into this primordial sea, which is basically sulfur and iron. It's kind of it's hard to even think about it. But oxygen started to go in there, and then it started to fill up the landmass. And then suddenly, there was so much oxygen, it had to go into the atmosphere. And when it was 0.1%, think about that, just a little tiny bit of oxygen in the air, and it killed 99% of life. Staggering statistic. And because we didn't learn that in high school or wherever, or college or whatever, we have a hard time believing that it's that powerful. And we now breathe oxygen or air that has 21% oxygen, 78% of it's nitrogen. Don't get me started on nitric oxide. It's like, oh my gosh, it's a parallel universe that nobody knows about. But in any event, so we've got this oxygen in the air, second most reactive element on planet Earth. Got fluoride, oxygen, and ozone is number three. Everybody's so tweaked about ozone. Oh, let me use my ozone. And they don't realize it's creating all sorts of problems downstream. But don't tell your hip practitioners that, because they think I'm a nut job. And when this crisis was taking place, it's called the Great Oxygen Event by the astrobiologists that study it, and how they can look back in time like that and know exactly what's going on. I find it utterly fascinating. It's like it's Sherlock Holmes on steroids. And they acknowledge that there are three key substances that emerged about the same time. And actually, there's a fourth that I've just discovered. So we've got copper. Can't work with oxygen if you don't have copper. So I think we've talked about that. So we've got copper. We've got enzymes that copper loves to play with, which are called multi-copper oxidases. It's how we make energy, is with a multi-copper oxidase. This pesky thing called cholesterol was there at the Great Oxygen Event. And what most people don't know, and certainly most practitioners don't know, is that it takes 11 molecules of oxygen to make one molecule of cholesterol. So cholesterol is an oxygen sink.
11 molecules of oxygen,
O2, to make one molecule of cholesterol. And cholesterol was never the problem back in the 50s. It was the iron filings that they were adding to the food system that caused cholesterol to get rusty. That's what the problem was, but they didn't own up to it. Then there's this fourth element that I'm just beginning to study, which is fascinating, called melatonin. It's an ancient antioxidant. Guess where it was made? Inside what are called purple mitochondria. And guess what those purple bacteria, and guess what they became? They became the mitochondria that are inside our body.
And the bacteria transition. So people hear that back. Bacteria became the actual mitochondria, which is the powerhouse in the cell, which is the active energy producer.
Exactly.
Part of the cell.
So humans are actually anaerobic beings living through the work of aerobic mitochondria.
That's fascinating, isn't it?
We're just a sack of anaerobic tissue, depending upon the function of these aerobic beings. It's phenomenal. I mean, it's just like, wow, this is like, I never imagined that we'd be getting into this. So there's a lot of misconceptions about oxygen. There's a lot of misconceptions about cholesterol. And of course, a lot of people are very confused today about something called vitamin D. It's a very popular thing now because of SARS-CoV-2. Everyone's all worried about it. Let me put that in perspective. First of all, the real pandemic on planet Earth, the true pandemic, is heart disease. There's 50,000 people a day that die from heart disease on this planet. Boom. Every 24 hours, 50,000 people lose their life. And right on the heels of that are about 45,000 people who die from cancer.
A day?
So almost a day. Almost 100,000 people die a day from those two conditions. And we're supposed to get worked up because 4,000 people die a day from a mythical, as far as I'm concerned, a misunderstood, I think it's a propagandized condition. Everyone's terrified of it. And it's a virus reacting to something. And I believe we don't need to get into a lot of the details. But the important point is we're now being bombarded with information and studies about how you can avoid this condition if you just get your vitamin D up. You know, it's just, oh my goodness, the article today was there's a 52% chance of getting COVID if you have low vitamin D. I mean, they're just throwing numbers out. There's a big Spanish study saying, oh, dramatic difference in ICU visits with people who are getting vitamin D. And what I was working on just before we connected was a presentation I'm doing for some Australian physicians who are trying to learn about what's really going on. And it's really kind of sad when you put the propaganda next to the reality of vitamin D. And they're completely different. But it's important to understand that the vitamin D is not a vitamin. It's a hormone. And so it's really important to recognize the significance of that. But these are really powerful chemicals we're talking about.
When it comes to infrared sauna, the technology at Therasage360.com is on the forefront of delivering results safely and effectively. The technology in Therasage 360 is not only affordable and portable, it allows you to access the benefits of infrared technology on any budget. For a 15% discount on all products on Therasage360.com, use code FSDW360. You'll be glad you did.
Vitamins are something that you cannot make on your own. All you got to do is go outside and get a little sunshine, and you're going to make vitamin D, or vitamin D. So it's not a vitamin. It's actually a hormone. And there's two different types of this hormone. There's sulfated and unsulfated. Well, the kind we make when sunlight kisses our skin gets sulfated. That means it's water-soluble. It's completely different. The kind we take when we're popping pills is fat soluble. It's not water-soluble. And so it gets stuck. And it gets stuck in the liver. And so it's...
And just for those people, by the way, because we'll come back to the liver in a little while, why that's so important. This is a real piece that I have to teach all the time with is liver is the filter system. Liver is the detoxifying organism that already has it's overworked. Let's just put it that way, especially with Americans, right? It's overworked. So, absolutely. And now emotionally even more than ever, but that transition of fat and water soluble that's converted in the liver, that's what Morley was talking about. So it runs your detoxification pathways. And he just stated it gets stuck. And when a fat-soluble supplement or, biochemistry gets stuck in these tissues, run with that, Morley.
Yeah, it's just I think most of us are operating from this see Dick run, see Jane follow the ball. And if the doctor says take D, then we go, oh, okay. But no one's asking the question that's not being asked anywhere on the planet. Why is this condition, why is this deficiency of vitamin D? Why doesn't it even exist? Why is my vitamin D low? Is anyone asking that? No, they're just, they're like Pavlovian dogs. My D is low, I got to take D. And it's like, there's a reason why it's low. And I've got a slide that I'm not going to get into now, but it's a 12-part slide that reveals exactly why vitamin D is low. And the two most important parts are when the liver starts to accumulate iron, because there's not enough copper in our diet. We've talked about that ad nauseum. But when the liver starts to build up iron, it can't detoxify, like Dr. Wade is talking about, and it causes magnesium to leave the liver. Well, when the doctor does the blood test to see what your D status is, they're measuring what's called storage D. The clinical name for it is 25-hydroxyvitamin D. And that's the storage form. And it's what happens is sunlight kisses the skin, that metabolite goes to the liver, and it gets kissed by magnesium, and then it becomes the storage form of that metabolite. Of the D molecule. And then it goes from the liver, it goes to the kidney, it gets kissed by magnesium again, and it becomes active D. Now, all of the attributes, the D is faster than a speeding bullet, D can leap tall buildings, all of these amazing attributes of D are all attributed to the active status. Doctors don't measure that. They only measure the storage status. That's a problem. So it's active D coupled with what's called the VDR, vitamin D receptor, coupled with RXR. It's a very important nuclear receptor that's only made if you have vitamin A in your diet. And if you're pounding down these supplements with D, you're blocking proper vitamin A metabolism, and you got a serious problem on your hands.
Okay, let's stop 1 second. I'm going to have you recap something. So an active D with vitamin D receptor plus the SRS?
RXR.
RXR, I was so close.
Retinoid X receptor.
And got it.
Retinol creates four different classes of nuclear receptors. And these RXRs are amazingly important because nuclear transcription doesn't take place without them.
Retinol, which is vitamin A. Retinol, which is a form of vitamin A, correct? Not.
Well, retinol is the formal name for vitamin A.
Vitamin A, yep.
And then it gets metabolized into what are called retinoids. And right there, the key that they're telling you is it's akin to steroids. Retinoids, steroids. And all the steroid hormones are made from cholesterol.
Yep. I'm
so vitamin A, vitamin A is amazingly important, and nobody's talking about it.
So what happens to somebody, before we jump into A, what happens to A? Because this is the question that people don't ask. I'm a big, 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 big fan, especially in our profession, with helping docs understand homeostasis.
Yeah.
Like, oh, homeostasis is this, but then we try to smart it over there. I'm like, it's still working, guys. It's still the same homeostasis. Let's just throw in a ton of D. Tell me about what happens when you throw that balance into the body. Like, you just keep taking all this high D. What's the outcome, Morley?
How many hours do we have? No, seriously. I mean, I did a presentation on vitamin D to the graduates of my program, about 350 people who have taken my course.
That's awesome, by the way.
Yeah, no, that's great. Very happy, very proud to be able to say that. And it was dead silence. They were stunned. And we talk about it regularly in the class, but I put it together in a different way. I put it, and they were like, oh my gosh, this is worse than I thought. And so people think, the average person thinks I'm a heretic because I'm telling them not to take D. And now in this post-COVID era, oh my gosh, you've got to take D. Are you crazy? I'm like, no, I'm pretty sane. And again, people are not asking the right questions. They're not asking why is D low. I know why it's low because iron is high and magnesium is low. Let's try to simplify it. We drive cars and we pay attention to two variables pretty closely. One is how much gas is in my tank. Right, but the other is how much mileage am I getting per gallon of gas? Those are two completely different measures. So here's the question: when was the last time adding more gas to your gas tank improved your miles per gallon? It doesn't work, does it? And so when vitamin D is like miles per gallon, it's not a dipstick function. It's giving you a dynamic indicator of how's the body dealing with inflammation. That's what it's really, really revealing. And it's been turned into a dipstick when in fact it's miles per gallon. And so.
I like the analogy. It's great.
Well, hopefully it'll help others because it's a very important concept to get a grasp of because people, in my humble opinion, are being poisoned by D supplements. And that's really a very strong thing to say. But and maybe one day we can do it, just a dedicated conversation where I have access to a PowerPoint, and I'll just take folks through the 12, well, actually it's now up to 17 points of conflict, and just let people really chew on, wow, there's more to the story.
Do you want to do that next week, Morley?
We might do that. Yeah, it might be fun. Either next week or the week after. Yeah. I think that'd be kind of cool. On the heels of this would be kind of helpful for people to know that there's way more. And I'm just appreciating the little sign in the corner next to my being is Frankly Speaking. I love Frankly Speaking. And I appreciate the venue to be able to share this information. I know there are people out there who just don't like to hear this in this level of detail, but it's like, I think it's time to speak up and let people know what's going on. We may not convince everybody, but at least we will have a clear conscience when we put our head on the pillow. We can sleep soundly knowing, hey, did my part. So I think there's a lot of confusion about this supplemental D. Part of the other confusion is up until 2010, the level of D that was considered, the level of storage D that was considered okay was 12.5. Now we live in an era where practitioners are shooting for 70, 80, up to 100. And the body was never designed to do that. And again, what other hormone do you know that's over the counter? Can you think of one? In a prescription.
Oh.
And then what other hormone do you know where the doctor only measures the storage form and ignores the active form? Do you know any of that? When you join thyroid hormone, got to have storage and active. All the sex hormones, got to have storage and active. You can't think unless you have both components. Because they're dynamic and they're changing. And you've got to be able to understand, so what's really going on inside the body?
That points out the similar factor. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the same thing with iron. It's like the way they assess an iron test, when they all they'll look at is ferritin, and they'll look at maybe serum iron and maybe UIBC or TIBC, but rarely them together. And without saturation.
And if you don't know what hemoglobin is, that's where 70% of the iron is in the body. Hemoglobin. It's incredible. It's like, well, wait, let's ignore the most important function of iron in the body. Yeah, it's that pesky waiter carrying oxygen. And it's like, wait a minute. Okay, so it is the way. Where's the chef? Let's talk about the copper chef. But no, I think it's a very appropriate analogy. And people just need to simplify. It's like, okay, so this is a miles per gallon thing. Wow. So what's missing, or what's causing my miles per gallon to go low? I'm putting the gas in. People put in the vitamin D all the time, and the number doesn't change. And they don't understand why. Because iron is rising in the liver, and magnesium is falling in the liver. And you need that magnesium to make storage D. It's that simple. And it's a serious problem. So what they're doing is they're saying, oh, 52% of the people who got COVID have low storage D. What is that really telling us? 52% of the people have high iron and low magnesium. That's really what it's telling us. And there's the study, the Spanish study, just published a few weeks ago. Dr. Wade, what was your ferritin at its peak?
81, I think. That was my saturation. Ferritin. I don't have it right in front of me. I'd have to double check.
It was a three-digit number.
Oh, yeah, it was definitely three-digit number.
Was it over 700?
No.
Was it like 500?
Let me see if I can find it while you move forward, and I'll come back. Let me see if I can take that for you. I have it. I just don't know if I can access it really quickly.
Yeah. I think what's important for the listeners to know is the higher the ferritin, the higher the IQ, right?
Sure. Nicely put.
So in the Spanish study, they had a control group and they had an experimental group. And the experimental group was getting vitamin D, right? They were giving them storage D. And so the control group ferritin was 680, and the control group 680, and the people who had COVID-D, it was over 800.
Wow.
And so what is completely lost on the public and the practitioners is that's the event right there. This is what's causing COVID, is this explosion of ferritin protein in the blood. And people don't understand what that really means. It means that the iron has already been discharged back in the liver, which is where the crisis is, which is why the vitamin D is low. I mean, it's like, oh my gosh.
It's classic. Yeah. So I'll share 2 points with you since you asked me what mine was, just out of back, past, and forward.
Yeah.
I was wrong in my iron saturation and how quickly we forget. But the ferritin was 412. And I think at the worst, it was 475, which is very misleading, because the practitioner, if I was to be with a medical doctor regarding that, which I hadn't sought at the point, was, it says above normal high. That's it. Okay. In the normal, according to this, and Morley will fill you in on the actual normal, but it says it's 30 to 400 for a male.
Yeah.
That's since changed. But that is a range, just so people are watching and listening. That is a range in a population, not a healthy population,
the population.
Then the iron saturation, and this to me was crucial, and Morley's helped me understand this on a deeper level as to many of the books that I've read as well, and that is, including Jim Moon's, is my saturation was 88%. I forgot how high it was.
Wow.
Folks, what does that mean? That means my tissues, I had 88%. I had 88%. Like a rusty nail who can't bend and move.
Yeah, your docking stations were all filled up with iron.
Nasty. So my current iron saturation, and Morley, I don't know if I sent those to you, but with the help of the RCP, my dietary changes, and several other things I'm doing, my saturation is like 15 or 16.
Sweet. That's great.
And yeah, that is
around 20%. That's good.
That is utilizing protein and some iron-rich foods.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Because I think, and I'll just plug this for Morley, I think it's because my copper balances have risen. Mm-hmm. I've worked really hard at that. My body metabolizes my iron much more efficiently, even as a hemochrome.
Yeah.
So even as a hemochrome, the expression of those genetic factors. Here's one thing.
Yeah.
Before you state this too, was when I went to the medical doctor, the surgeon, regarding my thyroid.
Yeah,
he had looked at my blood and saw my D levels and said, literally, 100% of my patients I do surgery on, average Americans, for thyroid issues and ear, nose, and throat, basically have zero vitamin D levels like you have. And he shook his head and said, man, are you healthy? That was a quote. And I just shook my head back and said, interesting that you feel that way. How does one have this experience with health, cancer, whatnot? And we know why now. I know much more about that now. But the understanding then was, hey, I wouldn't be sick here if and wouldn't need the surgery if I was truly, quote unquote, functionally healthy.
Right.
Or
what was your vitamin D level?
65 at that point. I had been working on that as well.
So you'd been taking vitamin D.
D3, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And so one of the things that the D supplement does is it increases iron storage.
And people there you go.
It all comes together.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, the public is being programmed and conditioned. We're all Pavlovian dogs here. And they ring this bell and they say, take D, ding, bell, bell. Oh, D, oh my God. And so we've become completely altered by the narrative, not knowing that it's very different when you really start to pull the curtain back and reveal, why is this storage D low? And what does a storage D of 65 really mean? Now, you probably didn't measure your active D. And they need to be in relationship with each other. But the number for active should be 1.5 times the number for storage. Well, 1.5 times 65 is we're about 100. No, it's about 100. Yeah. Right? And so.
Oh, yeah, yeah, not quite.
Yeah, let's go the other way. So it's 100. Well, if an active D is in the 40s, maybe 50 is, that's like outrageous levels. Hmm. But 100? Oh my goodness. It's like the body's not designed to do that. And so it says it gets into realms of physiology that I think, you know, we barely understand, much less try to convey it to the public. But the problem is people are being, as I say, misled and misfed around this condition around the world. And I think there's a lot of confusion also. What Dr. Wade wanted me to do is give people a perspective about this vitamin D thing, because it's another hormone. And we're talking about hormones. Let's talk about the one that everyone knows, but doesn't know that's a hormone. And what are they doing? They're adding this to orange juice? Seriously? They're putting vitamin D into orange juice? Yeah, I think you'll be amazed where you begin to see it. And it's not in a form that's particularly bioavailable.
Right. Economically.
Yeah.
Whatever level they can afford to put in there, they're going to stick in there and call it magnificent.
Exactly.
Or adequate.
It's just what you need, right? And so I was thinking about the hormones in general. I'm thinking about the clients that I work with who all need hormone replacement therapy. Again, that becomes it's just a part of being a very hip citizen on the planet now. I need hormone replacement therapy. I'm like, wait a minute. Let's back up. the notion that I had, it's actually kind of fun. I was thinking about what life is like on a farm versus what life is like in a factory. And what is a farm all about? A farm is all about recycling what you already have and reusing it. So what are we're recycling sunshine, right? We're recycling soil. We're recycling seeds up until Monsanto came, but recycling seeds was very, very important. And we were recycling excrement. It begins with S, but I won't say it on the air. But those four ingredients, really important for running a farm. It's all about recycling and reusing. Completely different philosophy on a farm. What's it like in the factory? The factory is all about replacing things. We got to replace the car. We got to replace the washer and dryer. We got to replace this and that. So it's a completely different philosophy and completely different economic system. And so farm is process, factory is products, right? And so here's where it gets really fun. Humans, we're little factories. Excuse me, we're little farms. I'm sorry.
Farms,
we're
right.
Little farms. We're constantly recycling things. We're designed to recycle things. And guess what all those recycling systems are based on? Bioavailable copper. It's absolutely amazing. Now, when we get sick, who do we go see? Doctors. And where do doctors get trained? In factories.
Products, yes.
They're trained in factories called hospitals that are funded by bigger factories called big pharma. Now, here's where it really gets interesting inside the little farms that we call ourselves. This is going to blow your mind, Dr. Wade, but we're designed to lose copper every day, and we got to replace it with our diet, and we're designed to recycle iron with the use of that copper in our diet. And so this little farm runs an iron farm inside it, but it depends on replacing copper every day if it's in the diet. And guess what? It's getting harder and harder and harder to find copper because they keep putting down glyphosate, keep using high fructose corn syrup, keep using NSAIDs and all these chemicals in the... I mean, it's wild, absolutely wild. And so it's just, I think it's important for people to have these simple concepts to think about. So we're little farms being treated by factory trained doctors, and they don't understand how our body works. They don't understand the process of recycling. They're all about replacing. Here, take this medication and replace it every day, right? Now I'm gonna treat you, but I can't cure you. And there was a really funny meme on Facebook recently that if your medications work, you wouldn't need to take them. So we've got this backdrop of the farm versus the factory.
I like that.
Yeah.
You had stated it this way. Make sure I'm understanding this part just to, for the metaphor.
Right.
Our little farm runs on iron, but depends on copper to run that iron farm.
Yep. Yep.
And efficiently. Otherwise, we can't recycle the iron.
You can't recycle it.
Got it.
And what happens is the iron gets stuck in our tissue. The farm has got to replace, they've got to recycle that iron all the time. 24/7, it's constantly recycling the iron when there's bioavailable copper at optimal levels in the body. And the body, our bodies, our little farms, are designed to discharge copper and replace it. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. So with that backdrop, I was thinking about hormones. Everybody's, oh, I've got a hormone replacement therapy. My estrogen is high. My estrogen is low. My T is low, you know, low T. It's just a number, you know, like, oh my goodness. So what are hormones? They're messengers. They're really powerful messengers. So if a hormone were a salt, a pinch of a hormone would be enough to salt 9 tons of potato chips, which would be enough to fill Badger Stadium in your backyard. So that's a lot of potato chips, but that's a really powerful substance. And what are hormones really designed to do? They're really a SWAT team. And so I started thinking about what really runs society. You know, we all live in homes and we live in communities, and some of those communities are near cities. And do SWAT teams run our communities? No, I don't think so. I think what runs the homes that I've grown up in have been parents. And it's usually the mom, truth be known. You know, like in my situation, I was on the road all the time. You know? My former wife used to ask one question at the end of the week. How many meals did you have with the family this week? Ouch. And so, but the thing is, you know, I'm not being sexist. I think historically speaking, women have been a very powerful force to run families, which sets the tone for a community. And then we have this other body called city council, you know, and they set policy and things like that. And so that's what really runs society. But if there's a problem, we call in a SWAT team and try to correct the problem. And that's exactly what hormones do. They're responding to mineral dysregulation. They're responding to metabolic dysfunction. And guess what they do? They move minerals really quickly. They all do. They all have a relationship. The first hormone on planet Earth, actually, the very first hormone was vitamin A. And what is vitamin A? It's a light sensor. It goes all the way back to the beginning of the Earth. Amazing. Why? Because the sunlight was always there.
So where are high doses found in your body? What's one of the highest metabolizing organ systems in the body?
And what's the eye connected to physiologically?
The brain.
The liver. Yeah. The liver. Absolutely the liver. And so... And thank the Chinese for figuring that out. And our ears, what are our ears connected to? Our kidneys? Wow, that's pretty cool. So, and I'm sure that the mouth must be connected to something. I don't know what it is. But
I think it's the butthole.
Is it? I don't know. Think about it. Maybe the whole intestine. I don't know. But in any event, We got this vitamin A. That was the very first. 3 billion years later. Think about that. Long time. 3 billion years later. This thing called Storage D came along. Guess what it is? So we got light sensor.
Mm-hmm.
D is light filter. It's sunglasses. It's not the sunshine vitamin. It's the sunglasses.
Got it.
Lower the amount of light. It's incredible. But then on the heels of that is this hormone called estrogen. What was the primordial sea all made of? Iron. So estrogen and iron have this incredible relationship. And then millions of years later, along came two other hormones called cortisol and testosterone. They came, according to the astrobiologists, don't bark at me, bark at the astrobiologists, but cortisol and testosterone came at the same time. Well, guess what? They're the on-off switch for copper. Cortisol turns copper off and testosterone turns it on. So the body had this very simple system. I got this estrogen thing going crazy with iron, and I got this copper thingy regulated with cortisol and progesterone. It's absolutely fascinating to think about the origins of these hormones, and I'm still chipping away to try to fill in the blanks with progesterone and pregnenolone, and all. But it's very different than what we've been trained to think it is, and the pharmacists don't understand this. The doctors don't understand this. What is driving all this change with these hormones? It's oxygen. The body needs to harness oxygen. And if it can't harness it, it's going to get rusty. It oxidizes. Rusty nail, rusty pipe, rusty car. Those are all different forms of oxidation that we can relate to. Well, it's rusting on the inside as we get older. But Dr. Wade, how old are you? I don't even know. 50-something?
51.
51. Okay. So I'm going to be 68 in a few weeks. So I'm an old man, right? But the level of iron in my body is higher than the level of iron in Dr. Wade's body. And that's why I don't have as much hair as he's got. That's why I'm not as strapping big and strong as he is. Because I'm, you know, it's that basic. I've got more iron. And so when you multiply your age times 365, that's how many milligrams of iron you've got. And for me, it's a big, scary number. It's a big five-digit number. Well, there's supposed to be 5,000 milligrams, and I've got like 27,000 milligrams of iron. And this isn't my theory. This is the leading iron biologists like Robert Crichton and Douglas Kell and Gutteridge and Halliwell. They all talk about this iron accumulation as we age 1 milligram a day. It's so basic. And
so I got a question for you.
Sure.
If this is maybe I moved slow to this point or whatever, too far ahead, but I'll give it that I'm probably too slow. So
I doubt it. Go ahead.
You're talking about aging. You're talking about the oxidative stress of aging to the body. And if we minimize that oxidative stress by harnessing better within our tissues,
yep,
the oxygen, then it does less oxidative stress, or it's less of an oxidant, or yep, like you termed it, yep, oxidant.
Yep.
So if you start letting and start dumping blood, phlebotomy therapeutic-wise, do you, by the way? Maybe
I
that's
do.
Too personal.
Absolutely. Okay. On a quarterly basis. Yep.
So, but what you're saying is that's the difference, is you're older and aging because you have natural greater accumulation of iron.
Yeah, it's a biological fact.
Got
Every
it.
Day we're on this planet, we're accumulating iron. Now, the people that scare me the most are the ones who think they're anemic and they take extra iron and more iron and more iron and their numbers don't change, but they keep taking it. And they think, well, whatever I can use, I use, and the rest goes into my waste. It doesn't work that way. We're talking about an organism that is designed to hold on to iron at all cost. And it's just people have no idea what all of that extra dietary iron and supplemental iron is doing. And so we've got this very distorted understanding of what hormones are supposed to do. And again, the mainstream thought is that hormones run the body. Mm-hmm. That's like thinking that SWAT teams run our
city. Yeah, good city. One.
And they don't. They're very important, critically important. I've got a cousin who is a 35-year veteran of Special Forces, Green Beret. And when he gets called up, we got a problem, you know? But it's just, that's not the way to think about this. And so the beauty of our body, of our little farm, is that it has incredible mechanisms to recycle and regulate all that when there's bioavailable copper. And the literature is there to prove that point.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I think it's a really important aspect of our metabolism for people to understand.
Ceruloplasmin is a molecule, a protein enzyme, more than it is a hormone, correct? It's not a hormone?
No, I don't think it is a hormone. And I think what's happening is because that protein, I think it's the biggest protein in the human body, has an incredible number of copper atoms in it. And I'm up to 24 different enzyme functions. So do you want a skateboard or a tricycle? Oh, you want a bike? Okay. Oh, actually you want a motorcycle. Oh, you want a car? Okay, we can do a car. Oh, how about a boat? Oh, you said you wanted a boat. Oh, okay. How about a plane? Or would you prefer a rocket? And so it has this incredible capacity to flux to whatever the need is.
What's the most cost-effective, most affordable, and portable way to get into infrared sauna technology? Therasage360.com. Use code FSDW360 for your discount today. Delivering results that last.
And I think under the conditions of someone who doesn't have enough of that protein in a active state, a usable state, then I think you're more dependent on SWAT teams, because the SWAT team has to come in and correct the crisis that should have been managed by the city council or managed by the family and not need SWAT teams. That makes sense?
Yeah, it makes great sense.
And so what the root cause protocol does is help build more ceruloplasmin so that you're in more control of your body. You're in homeostasis, you're in balance, and the body, the wisdom of the body is able, it sings. And see, the beauty of Dr. Wade is he's a chiropractor who was taught a philosophy of healing about the innate wisdom of the body. And what does Dr. Wade like to do? He likes to wake it up. He likes to nurture it. And he does it through stimulus and touch and his understanding of what's going on. And that, I think what's happening is people don't understand that one of the greatest gifts of chiropractic is its ability to balance the autonomic nervous system, to tone down the sympathetic, calm people down, and to stimulate and support the parasympathetic, which is all about rest and recovery. And people are living on sympathetic overdrive now. And I think society is burning out with all the tension in the air. And I think it's really important for people to understand there are basic techniques that can be done. And I think that the value of what chiropractors do is just, it's immeasurable. And then you couple that with a good diet and with what we understand about the root cause protocol. And I don't think you're going to get sick. I don't think you're going to need to worry about your immune system, because it's going to be properly stimulated, properly fed, and properly nourished. So
that's great. It's a great way to put it. Yeah. And I find, knowing what I know at this stage, having learned and experienced this process, I can't just adjust anymore and not address these other organic, visceral, somatic markers that signify where the body's struggling to hold alignment, to support itself with just physical adjusting, the neurophysiologic adjusting alone. It's a foundational piece, but sorry for that bell, foundational piece that no matter what we do, if we just throw a bunch of nutrition at it, but you don't have healthy neurological balance in the body or healthy functioning nervous system, it's hard to get all those nutrients out of that protocol. I had a gentleman come in this morning, by the way, super great guy, 91 years old, phenomenal attitude. We've done great just with adjusting alone. Mm-hmm. Came and referred from another chiropractor. His response was outstanding. He's just tickled with his, you know, what he expected a certain level of progress and just maintaining what he had. Mm-hmm. But we took it further and he just never expected it to be this good.
That's cool. That's great.
Yeah. And one of the things he came back with today, just as a discussion, was, hey, here's what I'm taking for vitamin D. I'm so proud and so happy of this because my chiropractor told me that I should, you know, just really just pound this vitamin D. Well, he showed me his levels. What do you think they were?
I shudder to think maybe in the 60s or 70s.
99.
Again,
now I have to break down this educational piece because he's a great, great follow through patient, great student of the game, very good at coachability and training. And so he's been doing everything he thought was the right thing to do based on the knowledge he was given. And, you know, my first question was, are you willing to entertain that this might not be the best thing, but I'll point in the direction so you can educate yourself and understand why. And I just gave him that example. But my point for sharing that with you was A, to just kind of throw that out there so you can opine on it. Mm-hmm. And B, I mean, it was around the prostate health. You know, it was like, oh, well, my PSA is going up. So then here's the strategy. This is what everyone needs to be doing.
So has his PSA gone up?
Not since then, but I don't know how much he's measuring it. They were going to do biopsies and he was against that. And so was the previous chiropractor, which is great. I can't argue with some of the advice, but again, I asked him, I said, how do you feel about that? Is that something you're comfortable with? He's like, right. Yeah. I'm like, great. Then you're doing the right thing.
Well, what I would do in a situation like that, I'd get them to invest in the full Monty Iron panel. I'd see where their numbers are, just like you saw where your numbers were with a storage D of 65 or whatever it was. A 99 is, you know, it's another 50% increment. I'd be fascinated to see where I'd really be intrigued where his ferritin is.
The only thing we didn't do was the Monty to get the ceruloplasmin, but I did a full bio scan with iron, full iron. So we're getting that. And the next time around, I would definitely want to look. I would definitely want to see ceruloplasmin building, but he's done nothing to build copper up.
Yeah, but it would be interesting to see where he is. And that's a scary number. The other thing you might want to do in addition to ceruloplasmin is do the active D and see what the relationship is. The active D to storage D, and then the storage D to retinol. Those would be two additional ratios to be mindful of, just so people begin to see that there's a relationship between these supplements. And these nutrients.
So I'm writing this down for patients. Have your doctor check your active D and your
retinol, serum retinol. And again, people think that D acts alone. No, it's in partnership and it's an antagonistic partnership with retinol, vitamin A. And then what we've got to recognize is that, oh, well, this storage D that they keep measuring, they're not measuring the active D. And there's a ratio that there should be. 1.5 active to 1.0 storage. Makes a big difference.
Ratio of D should be 1.5.
Again, we're talking about numbers because the storage is measured in nanograms and the active is measured in picograms. So it's the numbers that we're looking for to be in a relationship.
So 1.5 is the D or the storage D or the active?
1.5 is active.
Active D.
Active divided by storage should be 1.5.
Okay, so 1.5 to 1.
Right, exactly.
Okay, to 1. storage D. Awesome. That's great information. So what would you say to this general, this is a question I had this morning as well. What would you say to the generalization that all people with fear around this pandemic stuff, I won't say the name, should be taking 10,000 IUs of vitamin D every day. I think it was 10 milligrams of zinc every day and as much vitamin C as the bowels can take. What do you think about that recommendation?
I'm terrified of it, and I have a whole presentation around it. I think people don't understand what it's doing, and it's
You explained why the D was a bad idea very, very well today, even though you didn't like give us the thorough Morley version. How about the summary between zinc? Zinc is displacing what in the body when we're forcing zinc in?
Well, zinc activates the production of metallothionine.
Okay.
The metallothionine binds up copper 1,000 times more than it binds up zinc. So when you take zinc, you're effectively shutting down the copper metabolism. And people don't understand that.
Hmm.
Practitioners don't understand that. And I'd like people to get their zinc from their diet, you know, pumpkin seeds and meats, oysters and things like that. But as a supplement, zinc is a very strong supplement, and it will trigger metallothionine production, which is not good. The other time that metallothionine gets synthesized is when the organism is under chronic stress. So what that's telling us is that introducing zinc supplements is introducing chronic stress. It's like, that's not good. Again, what's in play here is that a very important saying, not known because not looked for. Well, I spend all my time looking all the time for what are we not thinking about? What are we missing? Missing information equals missing truth. And so we have partial information. And so we have partial truth, and we're jumping into conclusions with incomplete information.
I like that. That's a great way to put it.
So the recommendations for the contemporary problem that we have, whether they're allopathic or alternative,
mm-hmm.
what do they all have in common? They are killing copper metabolism, all of them. And people don't like to hear that, but that's a fact.
I don't know how you might want to just drop the mic after that one, Morley.
maybe that'd be a good note to end on, right?
It's great. I think this next piece, if you're very willing to do that, I want to actually have you share your follow-up slide presentation, if you're willing to do that.
I'll focus on the one slide. I think I don't want to overwhelm the troops, but I think the one slide might be fun to let people kind of sink their teeth into and go, oh, wow.
That sounds great. I would love that. And I'm sure our listeners would if you'd like. Any parting words, my friend?
No, I applaud your efforts to educate and stimulate your followers and your listeners and what you're doing to incorporate these discussions into your practice, getting people more sensitive to the upside and downside to kind of the recommendations of the day. And I think by your own example of what you've learned about the copper iron dynamic, and you're very graceful about your experience, I think it's phenomenal. But it's a wonderful platform for you to speak to them. Been there, done that. Look at me. Look what happened. And I think it's important for people to know the courage it takes for you to do what you're doing in the face of what you've experienced. But I'm thrilled to have this platform because it's very easy to talk with you, first of all. But it's just, you ask great questions. You always seek to clarify. And I think, I hope the followers or the listeners appreciate the effort you go to make sure it works.
Well, thanks, Morley. You're a giant heart. So I appreciate you, and I appreciate everything you've helped me with, just the level of understanding. So I pass that on, and I'm here to help support your work with RCP and the magnificence great. Of that. So it's awesome. So I look forward to our times.
Yeah, and let's find a time. It might not be next week, but certainly the week after, we should be able to find a time to really have some fun.
That sounds great. And it's more realistic, isn't it? I bite off a little more than I can chew sometimes.
We're all guilty of that.
Your schedule's very busy too. So that's, I know it is. So a couple weeks would be great. I'll reach back to you and we can find a time. Thanks, brother. I appreciate you.
Okay, my fellow health warriors, it's time to head over to iTunes, franklyspeakingdrwade.com. There, you can rate, review, and subscribe, as well as share, so more of our brothers and sisters can grow to realize their voice and their health freedom. Speaking up means you matter, so get on it. This podcast is for information purposes only. The statements or views expressed are not medical advice and are not meant to replace the advice of your medical doctor. This podcast, including Dr. Wade Anderson and his guests, disclaim responsibility for any adverse effects you may experience from the specific use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse and accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about the guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for such services or products. Individuals on this podcast may have direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. If you think you have a medical condition, consult your licensed physician.